At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Episode 3 of Bronze Bears, a special Second City Gridiron podcast series taking a look at the 2024 Pro Football Hall of Fame class that features the inclusion of three Chicago Bears. My name is Jeff Berkus, and I've been sharing some interviews and insights about Steve McMichael, Devin Hester, and now Julius Peppers. We will get into some other Hall of Fame talk in future episodes, but for now we're going to focus on the first ballot Hall of Famer. I'll be attending the Hall of Fame game and the induction ceremony next week with my colleague Jack Silverstein, who will be on the next episode that you'll hear. So let's talk about Julius Peppers. Do any of you have a random visual image that pops in your head of a player or a person when their name is spoken? For me, that happens with Julius Peppers, and it's kind of a weird visual image, but the April 15th, 2002 copy of The Sporting News featured Julius Peppers in this long sleeve, moisture wicking shirt, or what passed for moisture wicking back in 2002. And he had a red headband on. And he's in red because he's pictured in a wall of chili peppers, and the words red hot are splashed behind him. So, you know, the visual is a choice, but that NFL draft preview cover and that magazine was in my dorm room in college, and it just kind of stuck with me over the years. It's also when I first read about this 6'7", 295-pound just physical specimen out of North Carolina. And everybody was projecting him to be the top defensive player taken in the draft. And so when the Carolina Panthers took the North Carolina native and North Carolina Tar Heel, I remember thinking, that's really cool. I always love it when stories happen like that, with the local kid gets drafted to the pro team. And, you know, I hope he does well for them. And obviously he did a little bit better than that. He won Rookie of the Year in 2002. He had a dozen sacks. And then the next year he anchored that Super Bowl defense, that kind of the surprise run that the Panthers went on. At the time, I remember thinking, he kind of reminded me of Javon Kearse, if any of you remember him. Kearse carried the nickname The Freak, and he had won Defensive Player of the Year in 1999. So, you know, kind of similar to the start of Peppers' career. Kearse's career would really fall apart after an injury in 2002, again, you know, which was Peppers' rookie season. I think the nickname really would have worked for Peppers. You know, he's a little bigger, but you could just really kind of do everything, and he just really stuck out on the football field. You know, you don't actually see that many 6'7" defensive ends that can just move like he can. And so he really became the focal point of opposing offenses week in, week out. Peppers would really hit his stride in 2004 when he finished fourth in Defensive Player of the Year voting. He also earned his first of three first-team All-Pros and the first of his nine Pro Bowl honors in that year. He plays with Carolina for 8 years and strong resume. He's got 81 sacks. He's got a couple of first-team All-Pros. But I think at this point, he's by no means a Hall of Fame player. It's not clear that he is for sure Hall of Famer Julius Peppers. But he goes into free agency, and that just doesn't happen very often. Players like Peppers rarely hit free agency, and he signs with Chicago, who already had a really good defense, and it just looked like this was a match made in heaven. Bears really could have used that premier pass rusher to go along with some of the stars that they already had on defense, and Peppers would shine. if we're going by approximate value statistic that Pro Football Reference uses, which really kind of tries to take everything into consideration, Peppers had two of his three best seasons in Chicago, which I think is just huge if you think about how long his career was, and two of his three best seasons were in Chicago. His first year in Chicago, he was a first-team All-Pro. His third year in Chicago, he was second-team All-Pro. When he left after the 2013 season, all of a sudden his resume is full. I mean, he leaves Chicago as future Hall of Famer Julius Peppers. And so I think this is just an important point to drive home here, is that Peppers is an amazing player, and he delivered a significant piece of that amazing career in Chicago. This isn't a, you know, with all due respect to Orlando Pace, a situation where a player is maybe, you know, had a tremendous career and is looking to just kind of hang on for one more season, and they just happened to play in Chicago. This was a guy that chose to come to Chicago during his peak and made good on a giant contract. After he leaves Chicago in his remaining five seasons, which is impressive in its own right to have that longevity, he had three in Green Bay and two more in Carolina. Of those five seasons, he'd earned one more Pro Bowl appearance, and he didn't have any other postseason honors. So again, although he was a solid player after he left, he really ended his peak in Chicago. And so to me, this is important. As someone who thinks a lot about the Chicago Bears, their history, their players, is that Julius Peppers isn't a Hall of Famer without his time in Chicago. So if you think about his peak really being about 12 years, four of those happened in Chicago. That's one third of that peak. One of his three first team All Pros happened in Chicago, or one third. One of his three second team All Pros happened in Chicago, or one third. And again, I don't want to diminish his final five seasons. He was a good player for the Packers and the Panthers, even if he became more of a rotational piece near the end. He was able to do that because he stayed incredibly healthy and durable throughout his career. And that health allowed him to keep that freakish athleticism for much longer than most are able to. When you look at the final tally, it's remarkable. Peppers missed six games in his NFL career over 17 seasons. 17 seasons, he misses six games. And then you look a little closer, and four of those six games came from a suspension his rookie year for a banned substance. So I looked at it a little bit because I didn't remember this. The substance was something in a supplement that had ephedra. So Peppers said he took it to help fight fatigue. He was getting tired in his rookie year, tested positive for it, you know, said, oh, you know, my bad, I'll be better in the future. But that was four of the six missed games that he had over his 17-year career. The other two were missed for injury during his Panthers run. He ends his career playing in 266 games. So if you look at all of the players in the history of the NFL, and you look at defensive players, it ranks fifth behind Jim Marshall, Bruce Smith, Clay Matthews, the Browns linebacker from the 80s and 90s, not Clay Matthews from the Packers, and Junior Seau. That's it. And if you're going to look at the whole list and we add back offensive players and kickers, he's actually tied with Robbie Gould and Peyton Manning. Peppers' career was a long, steady path of excellence. He made the All-2000s Decade Team for the Hall of Fame and the All-2010s Decade Team. Hugely impressive to make two decades team. And again, I would argue that the 2010s are mostly because he played those four seasons in Chicago. He was a consummate professional. And I'm going to end this with a plea to Bears fans. I urge you to consider him an important piece of the Chicago Bears Hall of Fame history, and not, oh, Julius Peppers is a Panther. In this episode, you're going to hear from Second City Gridiron's Bill Zimmerman and Lester Wiltfong talk about Julius Peppers and how to appropriately place him in Chicago Bears history. I'm also once again clipping in an excerpt of my conversation with Paul Lawrence and Kirk Buckner, the Hall of Fame experts you heard from at the end of episodes 1 and 2, to help broaden the Hall of Fame conversation. The next episode, episode 4, those guys are going to be back, and we're going to feature them along with Jack. Jack's finally going to come into this series starting in episode 4. For now, let's hear from Lester and Bill. All right, I'm here with Bill Zimmerman and Lester A. Wiltfong Jr. to talk about the Hall of Famer, Julius Peppers. I want to start with Bill. What in the world was racing through your mind when you found out that the Chicago Bears just signed Julius Peppers to a free agent contract?
I can actually tell you that, because I was so stunned I remember my initial response. What's wrong with him? What is wrong with him? What injury, what nagging thing is there that's going to pop up that is going to ruin his career in Chicago that Carolina knew about? I had that. That was my thought, was like, you can't just get this guy. He's too good. He's too athletic. He's too much of this specimen that just shouldn't even exist in nature. Like, I was like, you can't just get these type of football players. So the fact that there wasn't some sort of broken foot that nobody knew about, and that he was able to step on the field and play at the level he did in Chicago in his, you know, I don't know his exact age when he showed up, but I think he was 30 or 31. The fact that he did that at that point in his career and was able, even after that, to continue to play at a high level, even after the Chicago years, kind of, I think, plays to what kind of an athlete he was, because he was so unique. He basically had like the speed of a defensive back, the strength of an offensive lineman, and the instincts of a linebacker. Like, he just was this incredible football player. So yeah, that was my first reaction. I was so stunned that they were able to pull it off that I just assumed there was a reason that Bears screwed it up without me, without realizing it.
I mean, I love that, because this is, you know, at the moment, giant contract. It's not something that necessarily Bears fans were used to seeing, landing the biggest free agent contract that's out there. And, you know, this was a guy that was, you know, the top defensive player selected in his draft, I believe, you know, came in, you know, with all the pedigree, right? And then played incredibly well in Carolina. This would have been his third contract, right? His first foray out into free agency, but you know, he would have re-signed after the rookie contract in Carolina, and then he's out to get his third contract. Giant contract, missing piece. This defense is already good, but this is going to, you know, be the pass rushing piece and all that. But Lester, like, you know, can you think of a bigger free agency signing than Julius Peppers for the Chicago Bears?
I mean, at the time, again, the Bears have always had the reputation, you know, that's just not what they do. And the fact that they went out and got the top guy on the market, and, you know, the story goes, you know, Lovie Smith was there. Like back then, there was no early negotiating period, right? Back then, it was free agency started on this day. So the rumor was he was literally there at 11:59 waiting to knock on Pepper's door with a contract in hand. I mean, that was the rumor. Who knows how much truth there is to that, but if that's the case, I mean, this is the guy that Lovie Smith had to sell, because he was the top guy in the market. Yeah, he was 29, 30 years old at the time, but he was still playing at an extremely high level, coming off another Pro Bowl. And the fact that Lovie Smith was able to kind of go there, yeah, the money helped. You know, I'm not sure how much money was being offered elsewhere, but, you know, and entice him to come to Chicago to play in that defense, I mean, it was just fantastic. And I'm not quite as jaded as Bill was at the time, thinking, oh my God, what's going to go wrong here? But yeah, I mean, there was always some doubts by people, like, yeah, there may be something happening here. You know, he's a little older, you know, maybe he's on the down end of his career. He'll be 30 here at the time of the season. You know, that's not a good number for defensive linemen, but he kept playing at a high level. He played with the Bears for, you know, 4 years at a high level, Pro Bowl three of those. And then he went on and did good stuff in, unfortunately, in Green Bay, and, you know, finished his career strong in Carolina again.
Bill, when he joins the Bears, he joins, you know, the established linebacker duo of Brian Urlacher and Lance Briggs. He joins, you know, Charles Tillman, who I think was probably still being a little bit underappreciated at the time. Was he the best player instantly on this defense? Like, did you feel like when you watched him that he was the number one dude, even with Urlacher there? Or was it just like, oh, we just got a dynamic duo? Or like, you know, where was he in this, in the ranking of that defense at the time?
I think in the moment, in my mind, he was number two to Urlacher. And I think probably that was just a Chicago bias, linebacker bias of the, you know, the great linebacker pantheon in Chicago. But I think looking back on it now in a different lens, especially in a modern lens, especially in a lens of someone who has now covered this team and this sport for a good 7 or 8 years now, and that was just after Peppers had left Chicago, I think looking back on it more, it was the importance of the edge position and pass rushing, and the fact that he could do so much for that. He was not just a pass rusher, right? He offered many. I mean, you could drop him into coverage. Like there were so many things you could do with Peppers. He was so dangerous that I think looking back on it now in a more objective eye, I would say that defense, especially that defense in particular, when he came aboard, he was the best player on that defense. And I think, you know, the myself at the time thinking that it was still Urlacher's defense was just, you know, again, like I said, my bias towards Chicago and that linebacker, you know, legendary linebackers, I should say.
Yeah, all of us on this call right now have done a lot of work with Bears history, like the top 100 list, Lester, that we were involved with putting together for the 100-year anniversary, and, you know, drafting some of these historic teams that we've done as little exercises on Windy City Gridiron. And I wonder, like, how do we try to rate the 4 years of Julius Peppers playing at, I think, a really high level? I know some people are going to have like, oh, the fourth year, he kind of fell off. And maybe he just had kind of an off year in his fourth year. Still a good football player, in my opinion. How do you sort of stack those 4 years of Julius Peppers playing on the Chicago Bears, knowing he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the best football players to ever play the game, and playing that portion of his career in Chicago against some of the other great defensive ends, defensive linemen of the Bears in yesteryear, you know, the Ed Sprinkles, the Doug Atkins, you know, the 85 guys that we've talked about, McMichael going in, obviously, Richard Dent, Dan Hampton, like, you know, where can you kind of rank a Julius Peppers against some of those other greats of the past?
Yeah, that's a good question. You kind of have to look at what he meant for the defense at that time. And he was clearly the Bears' top defensive lineman, you know, during his four-year stretch in Chicago. Like Bill said, he was probably the number one, at the very least, the number two best player on that defense. You know, so if you go look at a guy like Dent, I mean, was Dent ever the best guy on that team? I mean, arguably, maybe. You know, I think a good comparison for Peppers is a guy like Khalil Mack. I mean, Khalil Mack, you had a short run in Chicago. You know, it was very impactful for when he was here, you know, but it just was a short, really short time here. So I think if you look at Peppers, you know, I think he definitely deserves his place among the all-time greats. I mean, I think we had him on our top 100, I'm pretty sure. You know, he definitely belonged there. You know, he had three Pro Bowls here, you know, and I think the thing that, like Bill said, he was so versatile. I mean, yeah, he was great rushing the passer. You know, he didn't always get home, but he was always, you know, the pressures were high. You know, he did drop into coverage on occasion. And you know what? He was outstanding against the run as well. He could set the edge because he was an immovable object. You know, when he set the edge was set. You know, there was no one getting around his side. You know, he was had very good gap integrity for that defense, what you had to have, obviously. And I just think he's one of the best, you know, defensive players ever to play that position for the Bears. And look, it's only 4 years, so he's a Panther, you know, but like you said, his peak, you know, his prime peak years, part of it was in Chicago.
Bill, did the Bears make a mistake letting him go early?
I mean, you could definitely make that argument in hindsight. I don't think so at the time, just because of the fact that he was, what, sitting there 33, 34 years old at that point and had a little bit of a down season. Not a bad season, but just where you sit there and say, you know, is this... Are we now trending in that direction? So I think that's one of those just kind of business decisions where you look back and they go, oh, we could have gotten more out of Peppers. I mean, look, I know the Bears needed salary cap space, but Khalil Mack is still busting heads, you know, with the Chargers and what, 15, 16 sacks, whatever he had last year. So, you know, sometimes you just have to make a business decision for the team and you can look back on it and go, well, he still would have been good if you kept him. And I think that's absolutely true with Peppers, but at the time, especially where the Bears were, they're kind of, you know, that was kind of those transitioning. They're trying to get more offensive pieces in place at the time with Tressman, and they're kind of trying to change the way they do things, trying to keep Julius Peppers at that age, at whatever salary he would have required at that point. It's still hard to fault them.
I mean, just to Bill's point, I think that was the big part of it is it was where the Bears were as a franchise. You know, Mark Trestman just came in. You know, Peppers may have had a down year, but his salary, he had a ridiculous salary. Part of that was, I believe, the Bears kind of borrowed from his contract to kind of pay other guys. At some point, they kind of pushed money down the road. And I forget what his cap hit was that last year when they cut him, but they saved a significant amount of money, and keeping him would have just, you know, really hurt them. And that team was, I mean, it was, they're going into Trestman's second year. and the Mark Trestman era ended, you know, thankfully after just 2 years, you know, so if he would have stayed on that team somehow, some way, that would have been a disaster because that team.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Was awful.
All right, that was Bill Zimmerman and Lester Wiltfong. You're going to hear from those guys one more episode a little later on in the series, but for now, we're going to move over to the excerpt from my conversation with Paul Lawrence and Kirk Buckner. All right, so I want to talk about Julius Peppers with you guys first. And again, I get it. Like Carolina Panther, Maine, you know, he played for the enemy, that team up north, but he played, I think, some pretty significant years of his peak in Navy and Orange. And so I definitely want to celebrate him as that, but I want to use Peppers as a conversation about first ballot Hall of Famers first. Okay. So when I study the Hall of Fame, the first thing that I look at is, was this guy a first ballot Hall of Famer? Because it seems to me that there is basically an inner circle of Hall of Fame. If you're in the hall, you're in the hall. But there's something a little bit special if you get in on the first ballot. Paul, do you agree with that designation as something that is significant, that's bestowed upon somebody, that kind of separates them from somebody who's in maybe at a later class? And how do you think voters go about determining that on the onset of their first ballot appearance?
So Kurt has heard my rant on this before. And I actually have a lot of misgivings about the idea of a first ballot and what it means. I think if you look back in the history long enough, the voters in the 70s and 80s and well in the 90s, there was clearly a distinction. The classes were smaller. The voters were of a different mindset. There were a small number of voters. And if you read and hear a little bit, we don't know a lot about the discussions. It's not made public what the discussions about the candidates are in the meeting as they're going through the various ballots of the final 15. But it's clear that they were very selective. And there was a thought in the voters' minds, that you're right, that there was this tier of candidates when they would show up on the ballot for their first year, and they were among the greatest at their position all time. So yes, they would warrant that. Some of them needed very few minutes to discuss or debate. We don't have any records. They don't keep track of voting counts of any of that nature, but clearly there was guys that hit that threshold. But I think things have changed in the last few decades. And for me, the thing people need to keep in mind is when you go to the Football Hall of Fame and you look at the bus room, or you look at the bios and the exhibits and you look at the documentation, there is nothing in there besides the year that they were in the class that tells you, hey, this guy was the first ballot and this guy was not. The hall treats them all the same, which I think is the way it should be done. And it's actually first ballot is no, I don't mean to demean it, but it's not actually an official designation or honor or award that's recognized by the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Now, I get it. The media and the public and fans look at that and say, wow, he came up on the ballot the very first time he got elected. That must mean he's in this upper tier. But I'm a little sensitive to that because I think all the Hall of Famers deserve the honor. They deserve to be recognized and treated the same. I'm not of the mindset of Deion Sanders, who thinks there needs to be some kind of exclusive club within the Hall. By the way, Deion, it's not your club. You're not the gatekeeper for it. And the voters and a lot of the guys who are in the Hall of Fame, they treat all of their fellow Hall of Famers as equals. And one case I'd like to point out in the last several years that really resonated with me that says, okay, this first ballot thing is getting a little bit, shall we say, overrated. So Jason Taylor, who played for the Dolphins, had a very good, solid career. He had all the credentials. He was elected first ballot. Michael Strahan and DeMarcus Ware, two other players who had very similar credentials in terms of accomplishments. In fact, in the case of DeMarcus Ware and Michael Strahan, Super Bowl rings, but they had all decade, multiple first team, led the league in sacks. I mean, they have some pretty impressive resumes. Michael Strahan and DeMarcus Ware were not first ballot. Jason Taylor was. Sometimes the first ballot is simply a function of what that class is, the finalists that appear on that ballot, the 15 in that room. And frankly, some years guys get squeezed out for other reasons, because there's other deserving players who have been on the ballot longer and need to get considered, and they deserve it. Some guys get through and there's enough interest or support and it pushes them through. So I'm not devaluing it. I think it's a recognition, but I also think perhaps, you know, in terms of thinking of it as unique accomplishment or honor above and beyond just being in the Hall of Fame to be first ballot, I think in this day and age, there's a lot of evidence that perhaps that's a little bit overrated. That's just my view on it.
Kirk, what do you think? Is there a designation, at least in the minds of the voters that are putting these guys in, where they consider a candidate on the ballot for the first time and they say, this guy might be a Hall of Famer, but do I want to put him in on the first ballot, or am I going to go a different direction?
I think subconsciously, or in some cases consciously, yes. That's how a lot of them do think. Especially for the players themselves. You know, and Paul, you brought up this, you know, great example. I forgot that Strahan wasn't first ballot. And to me, Strahan is a far more important player in the cog of football history. I wondered too, what you brought up to Marcus Ware. I wonder if they thought, okay, we really like this guy. He's definitely going to be in the Hall of Fame. And I wonder if some of them were thinking, yeah, but you know, is he really that top of the pyramid guy? And maybe we just saw that last year with Antonio Gates. We know he's going to get in very quickly, but is he that top of the pyramid guy? Do we want to bestow that level to him? And, you know, at least with the Pro Football Hall of Fame, we do get some insight. Some of the voters do talk about what they can talk about. Some are very vocal on X, discussing their pushes, who they believe should be. And some people are mute. We don't know anything, what they're actually thinking at all. Some people might just be there just to check off a box. I don't know. And I know that I put a special designation. Am I right to do that? I thought I was, but Paul made me think otherwise. But yeah, it's certainly very special. Obviously, T.O. thought so because he didn't show up.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't first ballot. Yeah, they waited him, made him wait till his third year. And here's the thing, right? I mean, most years, those 15 modern finalists, most years, all of them are being viewed as these are all Hall of Famers. So there's a pecking order here, and reality is not all 15 are going to get in. And in some cases, as Kurt's talking about, yes, there's an elevation. Think about this guy is first ballot, and Antonio Gates is a perfect example of this. He's in that mix. People thought he should have been. He wasn't. But his spot was taken by another guy, so to speak, who was in that fight and got elected, who was very much deserving and needed to begin. Maybe that was a Dwight Freeney. Maybe that was a Hester. You know, maybe that was Patrick Willis, or you know what I mean? That's how that plays out. There's a mix of thoughts in that room among the voters. When is it some guy's time? And sometimes that time is a first ballot. And other times, Antonio Gates, I can tell, I'm quite comfortable in telling you that he will be in the class of 2025. He's probably the next guy up in that queue when he's considered. That's how close he was, just like Michael Strahan and DeMarcus Ware got in a year or two after.
Let's talk about Peppers a little bit. And I want to talk about to me, long career, like high first round draft pick. Like you knew that he was going to be great coming. You know, the expectation was he was going to be great coming out, was great early.
you know, had an excellent career in Carolina, distinguished himself before he hit free agency and had a giant contract with a contending team in the Chicago Bears at the time. Like, hey, this guy's going to like put us over. He had some excellent years in Chicago. Maybe had one kind of down year and the Bears decided to kind of cut bait. He then signs on to Green Bay, plays well at a different position, right? And then finishes his career, you know, still being a pretty decent player back in Carolina at the beginning. So you have this huge long career. I don't think there's any doubt in many people's minds that he was going to be in this class. What kind of stands out to you about his career that makes him one of the best defensive ends in the history of the game? And how did his 4 years in Chicago really impact his Hall of Fame case?
So I think, you know, he's a good example, and you've kind of highlighted that, right? That he had a sustained level of high success and performance over a fairly long career, was able to do that with several different teams at different points during that career. So there's a consistency of a high standard of performance. The stats support that. The overall sort of looking at Sipman and looking at the career as it finished up, I think that's really a guy who's played a long time at a very high level. You know, was able, you know, we think, again, you talked about this. We think about him being having all the success with the Carolina Panthers. 4 years as a Bear, I mean, that's three Pro Bowls, two times All Pro, finished fourth place, Defensive Player of the Year. So a short time frame, perhaps, in Chicago, but again, a very high consistency that matches very well with that time that he spent with the Carolina Panthers. And consistency and high performance of a standard like that is something that voters certainly recognize. Because we've mentioned before, right, there's certainly been players that had a short, high peak, and then they tail off. And those are the kinds of guys that often struggle in getting the interest of the voters because perhaps the tail end of their career, which many of these voters may have only seen that portion of it, didn't resonate with them as a Hall of Famer. But when you look at the entire career of a guy like Peppers, it sort of breathes and reads Hall of Fame all the way through it, in my view.
Yeah, I think to your initial question, like what did the 4 years in Chicago impact? I think it's not necessarily that it was Chicago, but just that how many times do we see like a high value free agent who just proved himself for years on one team, get a big payday, go somewhere else, and then fizzle just because maybe it was their time, injury, whatever. Peppers didn't do that. He was at the same level, and I can just sort of like sum it up perfectly. A good career, always good from beginning to end. Very few players can say that their tenure after 30 was almost as good as their tenure before 30. Peppers can say that, especially defensive players. Very, very few can do that. So I don't know that it's necessarily that he did it in Chicago, but just that he did it for a second team.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily saying it's because of Chicago. I'm meaning those 4 years and like the peak that he had there. Like, I think that's why I think that it's important as Bears fans to recognize him as a Bear, because, you know, a big significant chunk of what I think is peak, and this is a guy that played really good football for a really long time. So the peak may not be that much higher than, you know, some of the rest of it, right? I mean, these are high mountain range that we're talking about here when we're talking about the career of Julius Peppers. But I think he played some of the best football of his entire career in Chicago. And that's why I think it's particularly important to recognize just how important his years in Chicago were, is because these were peak years.
Yeah, it's when we use the word peak, but when I think of Peppers, I almost think of like a trapezoid, just like way to the, like, just so good for so long.
Yeah, it's the Rocky Mountains, right? I mean, it's you know, everything's a 14er, right? Like, yeah. Everything's really high up. This one just had, his years in Chicago, I think, were just a little bit higher, right? Like, you're at the top of those, you do get to look down at some of those other peaks.
I just had to finally use that geometry lesson for something.
Thank you so much for listening to Bronze Bears. The next episode is going to feature Jack Silverstein joining the conversation with Paul and Kirk, kind of coming into and resetting this Hall of Fame class. I really hope you enjoyed this episode on Julius Peppers, and hopefully I convinced you that the Bears are a significant portion of his career. And until next time, Bear down.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.